This is Pushing the Odds on SB Nation Radio, live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios in Las Vegas. Here's Matt Perrault.
You know, I think Saquon's done a good job. I've been impressed with him, you know, just learning the offense. You know, he's come in quickly, has a good feel for things, and obviously physically, he looks the part. Excited to see him with pads on and see him in the open field and see what he can do. But, you know, he's done a good job in the spring and stuff. You kind of see more in the passing game, and you get to kind of work on some of those things. He's been impressive in that part. But I know once you get the pads on and get some live contact, he'll be impressive running the ball as well.
It's Eli Manning talking about Saquon Barkley, a player who could extend his career, literally, if he is as effective or as talented as we think he could be as the number two pick overall in the draft coming out of Penn State. Let's continue talking about mini camp holdouts in the NFL. Charles Davis, Fox Sports, on the Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans Hotline. Charles, Matt Perrault, how are you?
I'm well, Matt. How about yourself?
I am great. Thank you for the time. Let's start with Saquon Barkley. You cover college and pro football, and so here we have a guy taken very highly, second overall by the Giants to come in here, and the Giants fell in love with him. They believe he's going to be an instant superstar. Do you buy that Saquon Barkley could be rookie of the year, could have a huge year for the Giants in year one?
Yeah, it could be all of the above. I think you hit it pretty well right at the top when you talk about it. Could it extend Eli Manning's career? I mean, when you sat down and looked at it, Matt, and, you know, the Giants had so many different ways they could go at number two, as we speculated ad nauseum, really, what, from January until the draft pick was actually made?
Sure.
And we covered all bases on that, but if Eli Manning was going to be your quarterback, what do you have to do to fortify him? Well, the offensive line has to be rebuilt. We knew that. I mean, that's a huge part for the Giants. And what has been one of the tried and true formulas in NFL throughout history? Mm. Pair that quarterback with a runner to take some pressure off. I mean, we've seen it time and again. It's not just young quarterbacks. Young, mid, old, whatever. Take that pressure off where his ability to throw the football is not compromised by the fact he has to throw it 40 times or more, or he can pick his, when you allow him to pick his down and distance, and when he wants, you know, down and distance, when he wants to throw the ball,
right?
That makes a quarterback that much better. So, yes, Barkley was a big piece there because, look, the Giants, if you talk about rebuilding the offensive line, they could have gone Quentin Nelson number two right there with Notre Dame.
Mm-hmm.
And it would have made sense. But could you imagine the New York media? You take a guard versus a runner, especially a runner of Penn State being in a lot of ways part of the New York metropolitan area, because I grew up back in New York State, Matt. What people may not recognize, with Rutgers kind of on the scene now, Penn State was that team for the longest time.
Mm-hmm.
Syracuse has been fighting to be the state of New York's team for a long time, but Penn State really had a foothold there and continues to have that. So it was a big deal to get Saquon Barkley, and I think it was the right move for the Giants when they kind of chose Eli Manning versus saying, okay, we're building for the future.
It's a good point. And so many alumni also from Penn State wind up living in the New York metropolitan area.
Oh,
as well,
do they ever.
Yeah, so you got a lot of alumni, a lot of giant ticket holders are Penn State alums. So there's a lot of combination there. And you mentioned running backs and what running backs can do for an offense. And I'm curious, when a player holds out and he has a point about what he's being paid, meaning David Johnson with the Cardinals, who's going to make $1.8 million, and I know he's coming off injuries, but this is an unbelievable player, both catching and running the football, and a dynamic game changer for the Cardinals when he is healthy and right. How does a locker room handle that when a player is holding out? You want him there, but he kind of has a point that he's underpaid heading into the last year of his contract.
Yeah, if we're talking, are you talking locker room players? You're talking locker room management? Which way are we going, Matt?
Just in terms of how, because nobody likes players holding out, because the media has all the players. I mean, the guys there get asked those questions of, like, where is David Johnson? But does it make a different dynamic when the guy has a point?
No, it does. It certainly does. And teams like to rally around their guys. You know, let's talk about the players. Let's talk about them first. They will rally around their guys. I remember being a kid, okay? I don't want to date myself. I'm 53 years old, okay? So I went to a New York Giants training camp, and Lawrence Taylor was holding out. And I was just a kid, but remember Rob Carpenter, the running back?
Uh-huh.
You know, very good player for them. He was always signing autographs afterwards, and I wasn't a huge autograph kid. I'm not saying I was the first to it, but that wasn't my main thing. I just wanted to be around them and see what a player looked like, you know, how they move, what they, you know, like, oh God, one day can I be one of them? And somehow I had enough, you know what, to pipe up to Rob, and probably in a serious falsetto voice that probably could have got me on Boys to Men at the time. I just said, Rob, you know, what about LT's holdout? How do you guys feel about that? And I don't know where I got the chutzpah to ask, but he just very matter-of-factly looked at me and said, he's a player. We're with LT.
Huh.
And yeah. I don't know that it's exactly the same now, Matt. You know, times are different.
Right.
Money's different, how people go about it. Look at, I guess the best way for me to look at now is, remember when Cam Chancellor held out in Seattle?
Mm-hmm.
That was a big one, because mm-hmm. he's not just a great player. He's a guy in the locker room that everyone gravitates towards and looks to. He's that father figure. And he held out and never got the contract he wanted. Mm. The team kind of won that one, you know, in terms of the organization won that one. And they had to move on from that. So I think the players would love to have David Johnson taken care of, because they would be a much better team. And I actually think David's in a pretty good spot in Arizona, because you may very well be starting a rookie quarterback there.
Right.
And if you don't, you're starting Sam Bradford, who's probably a one-year experiment there for you. And you're starting over with a rookie head coach and so on and so forth. Who's the player that gives you the best opportunity to win? David Johnson, when he touches the ball. Because to me, he's Roger Craig now.
Mm.
And a lot of people weren't around for Roger Craig, but Roger Craig was a threat to be a 1,000 running, 1,000 catching. David Johnson is that guy.
Yeah, I'm 41, and your story about going to a Giants training camp is one that I can relate to. When I was in 1989, the first training camp I ever went to was not a Patriots training camp. I grew up in Boston, but my uncle was a huge Giants fan, took me, and I met Jumbo Elliott, and I remember looking up at this monster offensive lineman and thinking to myself, I'm never playing football. Like, I am never touching a football if this is the human beings that play this sport. I want no part of that. And I was 12 years old, and I just looked at my uncle like, are you kidding me? But I met Lawrence Taylor that day, and I met a bunch of Giant players, and I kind of cemented my love of football for the rest of my life. So those experiences at training camp can do wonders for young people. And you know, when you look at the other players holding out, the Julio Joneses of the world who are holding out, it's a constant storyline, but how big of a distraction is it really when a player's not at minicamp?
I don't think it's a huge distraction for the players themselves. I think for the team, it's a distraction because you're getting asked about that all the time. When I say the team, administration, GM, right, the owner, if Mr. Blank shows up, will the players get asked about it? Yes. But I don't think they're that worried about it because there's no opponent coming up. You know, if you're in the middle of training camp and now we're in August and, we just played the second preseason game, now you're starting to get a little bit antsy because you know what he does for your offense. You know what he does for your team overall, and you would love to have him around. And at that point, you've been answering those questions about Julio Jones since the offseason. You've had enough, okay? I don't want to talk about Julio anymore. I want to talk about our team. And what does happen is it's a weird dynamic. I think the players stay solidly in the corner of the guy who's holding out, but I think there's almost an unconscious, I wish your butt would show up so I quit talking about you.
Right.
I'm sick of it, okay? Yeah. You drive me crazy. Get in here with the rest of us sweating it out and let's go.
Yeah.
And that's where it gets tough. And Julio's in a spot now where we know what he is, right? He's one of the best players in the league. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. But he's about to hit that magical 30-year-old mark. You see, it's one of those tough times about when is the right time? When can you do it? How does this work? You know, and when does the advance shift to the team? And, you can go on and on. It's so many different things. But are the Falcons better with Julio? No doubt about it. The problem for them now is what? They paid Matt Ryan in the offseason. As most teams do, you pay your quarterback. How does everyone else fit in from that point?
And I understand that Sammy Watkins got a big deal, and there's some players that are nowhere near the caliber player that Julio Jones is, but he's got 3 years left on his deal. It's just I can relate to David Johnson and go, you know what, man, you are a fundamental part of that team, and you're making 1-8 with 1 year left. I get why you want.
He by far outplayed a third round contract.
Yeah. So I mean,
I'm
totally on board. But Julio, I'm like, man, you should have negotiated better when you had the chance because you got 3 years left. And I don't care Matt Ryan's
making. And that's where it gets really difficult, Matt, because I think we as people, you do hear the same thing. I guarantee you hear it on your show. You throw that out there. I guarantee someone has already said, Okay, so let's say he renegotiates again and gets another deal. What if he doesn't have the same year?
Right.
Does the team get to negotiate backwards? Right, that always comes up. Right, yeah. Does the team get to say, well, guess what? We're going to cut your salary next year.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't really work that way, okay? So that's why the guys negotiate so hard to get what they can, because the team won't pay them what they're worth if they can avoid it. And the flip,
right.
and the flip side is when you make that money, then you're kind of stuck throughout the rest of your contract unless you have a team that's benevolent enough to go in and do it again. But they don't like to make that precedent because they'd be renegotiating a lot of people's contracts each and every year. No one wants to do it.
Yeah, and Khalil Mack is another guy who is not reporting. He's going into the final year of his deal for the Raiders. When a coach is new like John Gruden and you don't have everyone at every opportunity, how detrimental could that be for a coach who does not have a player like Khalil Mack who will be a fundamental part of that defense next year?
Yeah, I don't think it's detrimental in the beginning for John and for people because, I know John fairly well. He will do what he can within the rules of the league to be in touch with Khalil Mack. He will send messages to Khalil Mack through the teammates that are there. Because, Khalil's talking to everybody every day. What's it like? What's going on? What's this guy talking about? What's he about? He will send messages to Khalil. He will write love letters or whatever it is to Khalil that he needs to through the other guys. He will also let Khalil know what he's about through the other guys. He's such a transcendent talent that's a non-issue for them at this point. The issue is, do we get a contract done with him and get him back in? Because if so, everything will be okay. Everything
right.
will work out. Having him there from the beginning, well, the advantage naturally is if he buys into John Gruden and buys into his new program, that sweeps through the team. Your stars buy in early. Guess what? Everyone else buys in. Mm. I had a conversation with a college football coach last year who took over a program. I don't want to use names now because I haven't cleared it with him. But he took over a program and said that, here we are, the new guys coming in. They think they're pretty good, missed the guys from before. And our star player bought into us from day one. And that helped us have a great season. Because if he doesn't buy in, everyone is still relating to the previous staff, even though they're not there anymore.
Mm.
See where I'm going? See where I'm
oh,
going?
Yeah, for sure.
He said he saved us in terms of a lot of work of having to pull people along.
Yeah.
When he bought in early and said, guys, I'm with these guys, he said a lot of people jumped on board right away as opposed to mid-season, we're still trying to prove ourselves to these players.
Right. Charles, I got about a minute left, and you mentioned John Gruden, and I have a quick theory I want to ask you. He's talking about rolling the league back. He doesn't want to do the analytical stuff. But 10 years ago, Gruden said if he ever coached again, he would not punt on fourth down. Are we going to see anything crazy from John Gruden this year with the Raiders?
We'll see a lot of crazy from John this year. And what I mean by that is our remembrance of John is one thing. It's been all these years. And John has not exactly just sat on his butt in the TV booth.
Right.
John was going out to teams in the off season before he ever even took up the TV work. Remember, he almost took the offensive coordinator's job at Oregon with Chip Kelly.
Right.
Just because he thought that would be a blast. His playbook has been revamped. John had one of the wordiest playbooks that you've ever seen. And if you saw that Brett Favre thing that's sweeping, mm-hmm. Twitter and everything right now, mm-hmm. you hear those play calls? I will guarantee those are cut at least in half and probably by three quarters now. Because everyone wants to move faster, and you can't, guys learning it and teaching it and all that, I will guarantee John has revamped his book like that. So I would just know that we will see some different things. Now, the idea of him never punting on fourth down, I'm not taking that bet.
Great
that,
stuff.
That one I'm not taking.
Right.
Don't be surprised if you see John in a few different ways, maybe doing it a little bit differently as he moves forward because we all change over time.
Mm. Charles, great stuff today. Thank you for the time. I really appreciate it.
Hey, thank you. It was always fun talking with you. Be good.
You too. That's Charles Davis on the Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans Hotline. Apply simply, understand fully, mortgage confidently on Twitter at CFD22. Much more to come. More in the NFL next. It's Pushing the Odds, SB Nation Radio.